welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. During COVID, we all got a little restless and frustrated looking for something to do. Well, our guest today takes the cake for the activity he chose to undertake during COVID. John Schwemmer is an aerospace engineer by trade, lives in Windsor Locks in Northern Connecticut. He found and then drove all 100 original turnpikes in Connecticut. And trust me, this is far more complicated than it may sound on the surface, and he'll be along in a moment to tell us that story. This week's trivia question, it's a rock on a big hill overlooking Long Island Sound, and it's where two escapees from England hid out to avoid capture and certain execution back in their home country in the 1700s. What's the name of that rock? Well, we'll answer that question for you after the program, so you'll know the topic for next week's episode. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. Well, at first, the topic for today's show might not sound like the undertaking of a lifetime, but just hang tight until you hear all these details. John Schwemmer is just like the rest of us. He lives in Connecticut, happens to have a job, and like all of us, he got fed up during COVID and was looking for something to do. Now, while I don't want to give away the whole story here, I can tell you that he set out to track down each of the 100 original turnpikes in Connecticut. Now, some of those aren't too terribly difficult to find. After all, they're interstate highways or state roads with route numbers. But those are only the major ones. There are literally dozens of others that got our early ancestors from here to there by horse and buggy that aren't so easy to find. And some of those have been, in fact, partially abandoned. Some have been left to fend for themselves and not kept up. Some are like ghost roads. Nobody really travels them anymore, but they're there. Well, nobody, that is, except for John Schwemmer. Now, he found the precise routes for all 100 of these turnpikes, comparing old maps to new ones. And then he took off in his BMW to drive all of them. What a great way to fend off the boredom of COVID and help the rest of us learn a lot about this forgotten chapter of Connecticut history. John, I want to start off talking about COVID because it was during COVID where you said you kind of got bored, as we all did, but you answered your boredom in a way that nobody else I've ever talked to answered it. And what did you decide to do and why did you decide to do it?
As you said, it was COVID. We were all, many of us were just stuck at home. I was home alone working. I like exploring. I like going to see places, and it's common I would go see museums and things like that. But the museums were pretty much closed down, and I was like just at home thinking, like, what can I do? I just recalled one day that I had found this map on Wikipedia that was called Historic Turnpikes of Connecticut, and it showed all these old roads that were built a couple hundred years ago. I thought, that's something I can do. I can just get in my car and I can just drive those turnpikes, and I can go and see things, and I can do it safely. I won't have to worry about a mask. I won't have to worry about getting sick or anything, and I can finally just go do something and enjoy it. So I decided to just drive all the turnpikes one at a time, and eventually I drove each of them. There's 100 of them that were built in Connecticut between 1792 and 1850. They allowed private companies to petition the state to build turnpikes for profit. The state legislature would look at what was proposed for a map. They would define where the toll houses could be built, and they would also impose what the maximum tolls could be. The companies would raise money and they would build the roads, and then they could hopefully make a profit from the tolls.
And not all of them did, and they ended up, a lot of them, folding and giving them back to the local towns, and some of them were in bad shape, and this will eventually, as we get along in this conversation, it'll come back into play, because you went across some pretty rugged terrain as you were driving these roads. Now, as I understand it, the 100 turnpikes totaled 1,600 miles, and not all of them are absolutely complete because they have been abandoned, some of them, but you went every single mile.
Yes, I did. So I found a book from 1919. The author was Frederick Wood. He was a railroad surveyor, and he had done research to identify where these turnpikes were in New England. And he put a map in there for where these turnpikes were. So I used that map from the book as well as his descriptions. He typically had the starting and ending points for the turnpikes in the description, the year it was chartered, the year it was completed. And then I also found that all the towns in Connecticut at some point, sometime starting about 1850 and then over the next couple decades, had a map that was made for the town that showed where the roads were. So I used the combination of the Frederick Wood map of Connecticut, as well as the maps I was able to find for the towns, to identify what roads existed back in the 1800s and what the path of the turnpikes were for those roads to reach town. Every one of the turnpike exists in some fashion still today. Most of them complete, but some of them do have some missing sections. The quality of the roads, it's the full spectrum. Some sections are now present day major highways. Many of them are state routes, and a large number of them are also just town roads. When the turnpike companies went bankrupt or stopped as a business entity, the state typically would turn the roads over to the towns. Some of the roads are in things like state forests and they're gravel roads. And then there were some that I'd be driving along and maybe it was just now private property and I couldn't get through a certain section. Or more likely, there would just be a section where the road was completely abandoned and I'd get to a T-intersection and I'd be looking at a forest of trees that I guess you could hike through, but there was no car or truck or Jeep or four-wheel drive could get through there anymore. But that was less so. The vast majority of the routes I was able to drive, I would say I drove most of those 1,600 miles, although there were some missing sections.
Now, let's talk about one of the roads that I was shocked to hear you describe this. I had always been under the misconception that Route 7 in the western side of Connecticut that goes from Norwalk up to actually the Canadian border, I had always been under the impression that that was sort of the original route that went up through the Northwest Hills. And then you came along and told me, not so fast, that's not exactly the case, that there is the Kent to Salisbury stretch that's known as the Warren Turnpike, and this just absolutely, I'm sure that people who live there know about it, but I certainly didn't. Tell me what you found when you tried to go along the Warren Turnpike.
That was very scenic. That was definitely one of the more scenic sections. I sometimes had to go on the other side of the river because the original turnpike was abandoned on one side of the river. Some of it became railroads, so there's sections of it that go along where there's a railroad and the road would be right next to the railroad, sometimes crisscross it a few times. You get a flat tire on that one section. Part of it, the Appalachian Trail goes along part of that north of Kent.
Now, if you take the road from Hartford toward Boston, and this is a fascinating story that we've covered on a different episode talking about the old Connecticut Path, which was the route that European settlers initially followed from Massachusetts to Connecticut when the first team came down and actually founded Connecticut. And what's called, I guess, the Center Turnpike, you would know better than I, goes out from Hartford toward Massachusetts. Tell me about that stretch of the road and what your impression was of that.
So it's actually two turnpikes that were strung together at the time. It was actually done as an alternate route to get to Boston. They competed with each other to try to find better ways, better roads that they could make money on. So this particular road, the first section's the Hartford to Talon Turnpike. It starts near the Connecticut River in East Hartford. And when you're driving along in East Hartford, it doesn't look that historic. There's houses there from, say, 1900. But as you drive through it, you see a house here and there that if you enjoy architecture, old homes, you can see there's a smattering of homes there that are colonial. And then you drive through Manchester and eventually get to Talland. And Talland is a much more New England type of town, as people classically think of it, with the town green there, and the there's an old jail there, there's a museum there. And then as you continue past Talland, there is a turnpike built called the Center Turnpike. And the first day I drove this was, it was a beautiful day, but it had rained heavily the day before. And as I drove from Talland, it goes through Willington and then Ashford and Eastford into Woodstock and ultimately the corner of Thompson, Connecticut. I'm driving from Talland and the road becomes more and more rural. Eventually there's gravel sections. And then I came through a section where it opened up right next to a swamp or a marsh or a bog, whatever you want to call it. And because it had rained, there was water just gushing across the road. Not real deep, but you know, an inch or so deep. And I just drove my car through there. I just felt like I was so much in the wilderness on this seldom used road. It was so scenic and it was so different than East Hartford. And just driving through that road, there's no homes or anything. And it's just like out in the wilderness. I just felt like I'm really driving an old turnpike here. You know, I had the advantage of a modern car and the roadbed was pretty good. Parts of it, like I said, were gravel. But back in the day, these turnpikes weren't always maintained. The state was constantly after many of these companies to try to get them to get their roads in better condition, and sometimes even force them to not take tolls until they fixed the road. And sometimes carriages and wagons and stuff would get stuck, and the local people would basically make money pulling people, helping get people dug out and get underway again.
What I love maybe the most about what you did was exactly this concept that you were just talking about, you know, of being able to kind of go back in time. I was talking to a friend of mine saying I was going to do this interview, and I told them that, you know, when I went to Boston University, how many times I drove Interstate 84 from Hartford up to Boston or up to the Massachusetts border and never really got off the highway and took all these incredibly rural, scenic routes that are still there. And right near where this old Connecticut path is, they call the northeast section of Connecticut the Forgotten Corner, of course, but it's just absolutely stunningly gorgeous. And for a good Sunday drive, you just can't beat it. I want to get something on the record and not spend a lot of time on this, but not every one of the 169 municipalities in Connecticut actually was serviced by a turnpike, but you went to all 169 municipalities during this 1.5 to 2 year escapade that you went on, correct?
That is correct, yes. I drove all the turnpikes, and there was so few towns that weren't covered by a turnpike that I would just went out of my way to just for the few extra towns to make sure I hit every one of them. And the other thing I did was when I looked at the maps from the 1800s, there'd be the main part of town, and then oftentimes there might be a river valley or something where a little village was where there was a mill. So there's other smaller towns within the larger town. And I went to many, many of those smaller villages also. I just took side trips to just really get a better feel for what was in each of the towns in Connecticut.
Now, going to the southwest part of the state for a second, I want you to repeat a story you told me about. You had seen a name, I think, on a map, if I remember correctly, called Townhouse. And it was a map that listed mills and churches and everything else. And there was something about townhouse. And you really weren't sure what that was. And frankly, I wasn't either until you told me this story. And you found something in Norwalk, Connecticut. What did you find? What is a townhouse?
Yeah, so like you said, I was confused. All I could think of was, you know, a house in Boston or something in a row. And one day I took a turnpike and drove into Norwalk, Connecticut. And there's a beautiful green there. There's a white congregational church there. There's a stone Episcopal church there. And then off the corner of the green, I saw this brick building just down the street that really intrigued me. I didn't know what it was. I saw it was a museum of some type. And what I stumbled on was an old townhouse, a real historic townhouse from a couple hundred years ago. What I learned reading the information there was that back in the 1700s, the towns already were working to find some way to separate the church activities from the town activities. And the towns wanted to build separate buildings where the government functions could be handled that were separate from the church. Norwalk was one of the early towns that did that. And finally, the mystery of the townhouse was solved for me.
When you and I had our first conversation, you told me all these great stories, and we unfortunately don't have time for all of them, but I remember one you had said, for instance, you were going from, I think it was Somers to Woodstock, and the road just ended in the woods. But you mentioned something else, and this has stuck with me ever since, which is that you would tell very quickly if you were going to be in trouble going down a road that probably wasn't going to make it all the way through because you didn't see any power lines. Tell me about that.
As I drove these turnpikes, I tried to drive them in their entirety. A fair number of them had gravel sections in them. But I learned after a while that if there were power lines along the gravel section, okay, there's somebody that lives on this road because somebody put a power line in to get to a house. And typically those roads were in pretty good condition. If the power line stopped, all bets are off. If it was like going through a state park or something, there's a decent chance it was well maintained, but it could also turn into a really bad condition road. Sometimes I could drive through and sometimes I just had to just stop, and kind of hard to turn around at that point because I'm just kind of stuck on a really bad road between a bunch of trees. But maybe I could have gotten a little further with a Jeep or something.
And you said that occasionally, because it was COVID, so you couldn't get out and talk to people because it just wasn't appropriate. But you said occasionally some people would come up and ask if you were lost or if they could help.
Typically, it was a little bit by myself, but I saw people from time to time. And sometimes if I was like on a road like that, that was kind of a dead end where not typically a person would be driving, people would ask if I was lost or thinking my GPS failed me or something. And sometimes I thought, you know, because it's really quiet roads, that people would be kind of upset with me for being on the roads. But more often than not, they were just kind of curious. If the person was interested, I would tell them that I was just retracing a turnpike. Sometimes they would know it, but unless the road was called Turnpike Road or something like that, generally they would have no idea that they lived on a road that at one time was a major thoroughfare in the early 1800s.
I want to wrap up on a story. It was this beautiful road, one of the turnpikes, one of the 100 turnpikes that you found, that went north into Colebrook and started further south in, say, Winchester, a little bit south of there, the Waterbury Turnpike. And you went north and then you went south a little while later. I don't want to take the storm out of your story here. Tell us about that. What happened?
Waterbury Turnpike, one of the more interesting sections, actually goes through Winchester. And if you're in Winchester, there's a green there. There's a sign that actually marks the turnpike. It has listed the rates of the tolls in the 1800s. I had driven that from Winchester up towards Winstead, and it goes through a wooded section. There's a section where there's no houses or anything, and it was kind of a rugged road. But as I got up towards Winstead, I found it beautiful because it goes right by a reservoir, and it was, to me, very scenic. The whole section was gravel. And then a couple years later, I was with a friend one day, and I decided to show my friend this road. And we were up on the Winstead side, so we started from the north. So I drove past that beautiful reservoir. After that, the road got quite bad. I was driving in my 2011 BMW, which doesn't have a lot of ground clearance. And the road was, I'm sure it was worse. It just seemed much more challenging than the last time I had driven it. And there were rocks in the road, and I had to drive around them, and was worried that I would damage my car. And I had the GPS going. I could see on Google Maps that I was getting pretty close to the south end where it turned to pavement again. And the road eventually, after going through all this rugged section, it opened up into an area that was sort of marshy where the road goes through. And I got to that clearing, and there was a Jersey barrier completely across the road. And a road that I had just taken 2 years earlier was now impassable. It was so stunning for me because I just assumed I could just keep repeating doing these roads. And I realized nothing is certain. And, you know, at any point, one of these roads might be closed down and you can't do it anymore. I guess you just have to enjoy life whenever you can, because it can always change.
I'd have to say that truer words were never spoken. Well, that wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. Recently, I drove a couple of the more remote original turnpikes, and let me tell you, it's an experience you would want to pursue. Now, you don't need a Jeep to do the overwhelming majority of these roads, but you will want to bring a camera and a full tank of gas. I want to thank our guest for today's program, John Schwemmer, the aerospace engineer from Windsor Locks, who found and then drove all 100 of the original turnpikes in Connecticut. The answer to this week's trivia question: it's a rock on a big hill overlooking Long Island Sound, and it's where two escapees from England hid out to avoid capture and certain execution back in their home country in the 1700s. What's the name of that rock? Well, it's Judge's Cave, and it's on top of West Rock in Hampden, overlooking New Haven Harbor. Quite a view, as a matter of fact. Back in the 1700s, two men who served as judges on the jury that sentenced then-British King Charles I to death hid inside Judge's Cave in an effort to avoid capture and death themselves. Did it work? The answer? You'll have to wait till next week. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy.